projection.
Hey, welcome to Taking It Down, the TV and streaming podcast from the Alabama Take. We give thoughts that range from complex to simple, from analytical to basic about shows and movies on TV. I'm Blaine Duncan, editor-in-chief of the website The Alabama Take. I've always enjoyed determining why I like and dislike things, and I have a little bit of a side hustle as an English teacher, so hopefully that lends itself to our busy listeners who want some insight. It's great for listeners that it's not just me breaking down what you want to know. It's Adam Morrow, our erudite touring and studio musician who keeps up with fine literature, Donovan Reinwald, who specializes in media at a New England college and loves film, old books, and more, and Natalie Morrow. She's the first person to go to about fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and Beyonce's music. We're here for lovers of television who are just too busy for anything more than the series or movie itself, or maybe for the person who just does not want the typical critic or Hollywood adjacent analysis. Plus, like a lot of Alabama Take productions, we're high quality. We actually think. Let's get into the show. Here we are. It's just me. It's just Adam. We kind of did this together. Did we start this together? Or did I sort of start it and then pick guest as...
I think I was a guest that just didn't go away. When you told me about it at first, I thought Blaine is going to write essays, which will become manifestos when he says them aloud if he's just talking into a microphone at his house by himself.
Did you really think that? Are you joking with me?
No, I mean, no, I am joking about the manifesto part. I thought at first you were just going to verbalize your feelings on, because I listen to a lot of podcasts where there's only one person talking. Mm-hmm. I think too. They're great. I thought you were going to have one of those, but it is easy to, when your buddy's going to put some thoughts, because you would have to write that, right? A lot more than, we kind of have a give and take a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's manifestos just make me laugh, so I assume that's where it was going.
Man, now I want to do that.
I'd listen to your manifesto podcast.
Well, I debated doing one today until I realized I could get you on board last minute. Because here's what's going on. If you're listening, obviously, we'll explain this. We have watched no TV this week. And I'm speaking for myself. None. Like, none.
I saw the challenge. That was it.
Oh, really? See, I haven't even watched it yet. I'm that far behind. I haven't watched the challenge. We record on Sunday. That was aired on Wednesday. I couldn't even chime in on a column on the Alabama Take about the challenge, so I felt bad. And I haven't even read it because I don't want to be spoiled. The only TV I watched was a few minutes of mini games yesterday and then LSU at Alabama. I watched it. And you didn't even get to watch
it. I watched most of it.
Oh, you did?
It was a busy night. There were too many things going on. But yeah, we got out of my commitment early enough to catch most of the game.
You played a little guitar last night for listeners who don't know what we're talking about. Yeah, in Florence.
And it was just a one song thing. Oh. So, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were doing like a set.
No, it was John was getting an award from this songwriters thing. And so me and Andy Baxter played one of his songs at the ceremony.
Just you two?
Yeah.
No John?
No John. He didn't know we were going to be there.
Uh-uh.
It was like a congrats on the award. We also have the surprise, and then we played.
Oh, was it cool?
I thought so.
Okay. What song did you pick?
He has one that hasn't been released that he recorded for both of his most recent solo records, and they didn't make the album. Like, he hasn't, I guess, been happy with how they turned out, but he keeps going back to it, called See If I Care. So it's one that I had played on before and suggested to Andy might be cool. So we did that.
Yeah, we haven't watched any. I haven't watched any TV. You haven't watched but one episode and some football.
Watch some football. Yeah.
Do we dare talk about football?
Yesterday was quite a day of games. I didn't realize how stacked the lineup of matchups was. I mean, not a lot of like top five kind of stuff, but.
But good.
Just some fun games, yeah.
Bedlam a little early this year, right?
Maybe so. I loved the pettiness of that too. That after their victory, they played. Would they play "We're Never Getting Back Together"? The Taylor Swift song apparently was just blasted at full volume throughout the stadium. I love stuff like that.
Oh, the ubiquitous nature of some Taylor Swift. She's even at Bedlam.
Well, she wasn't there. She's not going to Stillwater.
You'd be surprised.
You think she'd go to Stillwater?
She's everywhere.
That's true.
They got the money with, what's his
Boone.
Name? Yeah,
Boone. Yeah, Boone Pickens. Him.
That's the guy. We're actually talking a little about music today. It's an odd episode. We tend to stay in our lane of TV and streaming, but that went down the shitter. But I am not caught up on any TV.
So. Well, no man is an island until he plants himself in front of a television.
Oh, the Beatles is where I'm going with this.
The premise is, what Beatles songs would we choose for legendary challenge moments?
Oh, is that what we're doing?
That's what you told me.
Did I say? Hang on to that idea.
That was the hook for me.
Oh, hang on to that idea. The Beatles released a new single, and you heard that right, nearly 43 years after John Lennon's murder, and just right at 22 years of George Harrison's passing from cancer. The group have kind of returned with Now and Then. That's the name of the single. The story is that it was one of the songs John had demoed on piano long ago, and the three living members tried to work it up in the 90s, around 94, 95, for the anthology series and that documentary. George never was satisfied due to an inability to separate the tracks well enough, so they shelved it. Instead, they released Free as a Bird and Real Love on those compilations, which they recorded with John's demos as well. And I think with the help and inspiration of Peter Jackson's documentary, Get Back, Ringo and Paul gave it another try with the help of AI to separate the tracks, and it worked, and Paul ended up playing some George-inspired slide for it. Mm. And have you heard it?
No.
Really? I figured that would be at the top of your list.
It's funny that you would say that. I talked with some friends this week about kind of where we're at as a music and especially music, but also television and film culture, where not that many years ago, that would have been like, I have to listen to that before I have my coffee kind of appointment. Yeah. Listening, and it wasn't this time. Maybe it was because it was a busy week. I don't know. Or maybe it's because I know it wasn't, that AI was a tool this time and not like the generative part of the process, but I'm so sick of hearing about AI. And I know we're at the tip of the iceberg on it and that I just need to get used to it. But I mean, I think that I know we're not far away from estates selling like AI rights.
Yeah.
So the new albums can be created and that sort of thing. And that's not what happened here, but a cursory glance did not get me excited. What you just said gets me very excited.
No, it was not made from AI. I think that's
right.
Really a clear distinction. It was simply used to help with the separation of tracks. And if I'm understanding everything correctly, do you remember those anthology series?
Mm-hmm.
And those albums? How old were you when those were in 95?
I mean, those would have been what I listened to. I mean, I was like a little kid, but I'm saying when I would find the Beatles, that would have been the most recent thing to have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Or like the mix for CD that I listened to in my first car and could, one speaker wasn't as good as the other. So like John would disappear for a while because
they hand
those so hard and it was such a poor, which they ended up fixing. That's I actually compared it to when I compared this release to when all the mono records came out and the redone stereo stuff and how like I was at the record store the day that those came out and only had, I was in college, so like X amount of money, not a lot, but like strategically made my picks on what albums I wanted to hear in mono. Because that was like revelatory compared to that 90s stuff.
Yeah, I never got my hands on the mono. I did get that collection in stereo, which is still quite good, but I was listening to it earlier.
I just love the idea that the mono was what they mixed the mono, or they were present for the mixing of mono, and then stereo was such a new technology that seemed insignificant to them that they would like go eat lunch while the stereo mix was being done by like a junior engineer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Dylan did the same thing with all of his first, five, six albums?
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. And if you go and listen to his mono mixes, they are there are some differences.
I think they sound great.
I do too.
I think all the, like, the Spectre stuff, all of the, anything that was like happening in the first however many years of the 60s in rock and roll and pop just sounded so huge and good in mono.
What about stereo? Were they not getting right, do you think?
I mean, there's a whole subtle art to, you know, you don't just like hard pan things most of the time with stereo anymore. Like you can, I realize people can't see what I'm doing with my hands, but like you can use all points on the clock, you know, if you think about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And create complementary relationships, and you know, the way, if they had four tracks or eight tracks or whatever, they were combining things as they went down to make room for other instruments. So they would have to, you know, all those decisions would play out in the stereo, where like you may, you know, I'm sure everybody owned a car at some point that like they just couldn't hear some of the lyrics because maybe John was on one side and Paul was on the other. Mm-hmm. Or they couldn't hear one of the guitars or something like, I mean, even like drums were hard panned. So it's.
So it reads cool on paper, but it something just doesn't quite work out sometimes.
Well, I guess the home listening technology had this thing. I'm trying to think of like something that would be similar now where like the technology's, you know, when something new comes out, like maybe like a 3D TV, and people are like, 3D TV is the wave of the future.
Yeah.
And it clearly wasn't. Right, but some people bought 3D TVs, but then the creators never caught up to everybody having one. Like, it relies on everybody adapting this technology for it to move forward.
Uh-huh.
So if mono records already sounded incredible on radio and on vinyl, then why would you think that you needed to... I mean, we know now, like, what all you can do with stereo, and I mean, all of them dove into that world. But at first, I can see why it wasn't really a going concern.
What do you think of Free as a Bird and Real Love?
Maybe. I have no opinion.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you don't listen to them?
No. I need to, because I never had the physical, that's anthology stuff, right?
Yes. They begin the second and third anthology, I think, or the first and second. It's the first song.
I need to do like a listen through, because my Beatles, I didn't grow up in a Beatles house.
Yeah, me either.
Which ended up being kind of lucky to then like already love music and then find the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there's a way that you appreciate things that you grew up with, for sure. And like that is like rooted so deep in who you are. But then to find things that are obviously, you know, the greatest to ever do it later on, and you already have like the framework for appreciating that art,
mm-hmm.
made it have a huge impact. But all of that to say, yeah, I was just like grabbing a Sgt. Pepper CD here, and you know, Magical uh-huh. Mystery here, and White Album here, and so I never got the anthology would have been out of reach.
Oh, okay.
I definitely started when YouTube came around, and you could like, you know, people were uploading music, and I could do things like listen to the what felt like 30 versions of Across the Universe.
Yeah.
And compare all of that. Yeah, I definitely dug that. But I've never, I feel like I've seen like, it's like episodes of a TV show that I haven't seen all the way through.
Mm.
Did you buy it immediately, the whole anthology?
I bought the first two.
Okay.
I must have not been able to afford the third one. I would have been 18.
Okay.
And I had them on cassette tape, so they're long gone. And I wasn't as thrilled with the Beatles' early work, still not crazy necessarily about it, but that first double cassette for Volume 1 was all that early stuff of the pop things that they were doing at the time, and it was just, maybe that dissuaded me from buying anymore, but I do like Free as a Bird and Real Love a lot, considering that they are almost just demos.
Mm.
I like a lot. I like Real Love a lot. I catch myself singing it a lot to myself, as much as maybe some other Beatles songs.
I feel like everybody has an era that they really like ride for with the Beatles. Is there a cutoff? Is like a Rubber Soul? Where does that, what line on the divide is that?
Yeah, a cutoff? No, that's where it would really begin.
Okay.
That's where it starts for me.
That's where the turn from the early poppy stuff happens.
Yeah. And they're so much better. Did Help come out before it?
Yes. Right?
Right there at Help, maybe. I would give them that much, too. So modern day Beatles, it's almost like they still exist, but they obviously don't. Now and Then is a little saccharine for a Beatles song. I can see older Paul being excited to finish it. It's all, but there's an interesting lyric of what John's doing there that keeps it from being too saccharine or too sweet. I think it's worthy of adding to a Beatles collection. There are strings in there that I wish I could hear it without. I think I might prefer it without strings. I don't know. I've listened to it like 3 or 4 times. I need to listen to it maybe a couple more. But I do like that play on the lyric that John does with the idea of Now and Then. I won't spoil it for you, really. Let's talk about this, though. What's the greatest Beatles album, and why is it the White Album?
I think I probably have a weird choice for
this.
Okay.
Yours is Magical Mystery Tour.
It is.
I knew it.
Which is, for a band that started making, like, albums, mm-hmm. you know, like, really kind of pioneering the idea of what that could be with something like the White Album or Sgt. Pepper, you know, on down the list, I realized that this is more like a loose collection of songs.
It is, yeah.
Than anything else, and not even really a proper... Strawberry Fields could have gone on Sgt. Pepper, right? Like, there's some, like, you can kind of, like...
It's in there.
You could make... They were really batched with other songs, and they were used in the film and all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't... It was released differently here and in the UK, right? Like, different track listings, and... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a B-sides album, or like a singles album or something. But I think it has the highest concentration of great Beatles tunes.
Yeah, I mean, it is like single after single, almost.
And even the weird stuff, like, you know, the quote-unquote weird stuff, like Fool on the Hill or Blue Jay Way or Flying or whatever. Like, I love that stuff.
Yeah, I love Fool on the Hill.
That run between, you know, it starts with Magical Mystery Tour, which is an underrated, just like banger of a rock song, I think.
Yeah.
And then goes through that kind of weird Blue Jay Way, Fool on the Hill. It's just weird. It's very strange.
Yeah. They did it for the cartoon or vice versa?
Yeah, I think so. It's for the film.
Huh.
Which all started as, you know, they got so obviously famous and wealthy and every idea turned to gold. And this was one where, like, it maybe didn't turn to gold. Weren't they originally, like, Paul was like, we're going to get a bus and a film crew and just drive around and see, like, that'll be the movie. You know, like, they're, like, a little drunk on their own success, but they were still writing songs like this.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever heard that one, that story.
I may be speaking out of turn here, but that I seem to have some memory of that being the background for that, and, like, they salvaged this out of it. I don't know. It's just such a different, you know, they're inventing the music industry as they go in a lot of ways. So, like, sometimes when we look at what they did as, you know, like, an intentional statement of an album, like, oftentimes it was, but sometimes it's just those were the songs that were around and it was time to put something out.
Right. Yeah, I'm a White Album guy. Maybe because of the plethora. I think it's good, start to finish.
Nobody would argue that, right?
Okay, I didn't know.
I feel like White, if you ask people their favorite, it's either going to be White Album or Sgt. Pepper most of the time.
Okay.
Don't you think?
I guess Sgt. Pepper is, I don't know, is Let It Be in there? Is Abbey Road in there for anyone?
I don't know. I think White Album, to me, feels like the last of a certain type of Beatles production. You know, like maybe the last, like, unified kind of...
Hmm.
You know, it grew out of maybe the same ground as Sgt. Pepper. I don't know.
I mean, it's weird. That's another reason why I like it.
It is weird.
There's just enough weirdness in between beautiful melodies that's happening. Even Yoko's parts are awesome.
See, I have nothing against Yoko, so I may be an outlier here.
Well, me either, but I'm just saying, you can make the argument that even Yoko's parts are awesome. In the continuing story of Bungalow Bill, when she gets her line, it's awesome.
Yeah. There's so many songs on that record. I'm looking up the full track list.
Yeah. It's just all your favorite songs. That's what it is.
I do think the end of side one While My Guitar Gently Weeps and Happiness is a Warm Gun as a 1-2 combination is, that may be one of their best back-to-back.
Ooh, it'll get you. Talk to me about that tone on While My Guitar Gently Weeps. How's he getting that?
I have no idea.
My goodness. What's he playing there, I wonder? One of those big body hollow guitars?
I don't know. That was one that they did on the Paul and Rick Rubin thing, right? Maybe. I think they did, where they had the multi-track laid out on the console, because they showed how Paul's like, well, I felt this was like kind of a heavy, like an early heavy rock kind of thing, because that boom, 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 boom kind of thing is so, it's heavy.
Happiness is a Warm Gun?
I thought we were talking While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
I may have said
I don't know how they got tone on either of them, is what I'm getting at, but the idea of that rhythm section being so driving with this like kind of like wistful acoustic-y kind of thing over it for While My Guitar Gently Weeps is, I hadn't thought of it in that way before. That was one of the powerful things about that Rick Rubin doc.
That rhythm, you're talking about the rhythm section on While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and it's not hard to play, especially the verse part, but it's perfect. It's emotional somehow on drums.
Yeah, that's one that when people say, oh, it's not hard to play, I think the individual parts, if you're sitting at your house with a sheet of tabs or something like that, may not be hard, but I challenge anyone to find a rhythm section that could do that and make it feel that way.
Yeah, it's the feel. That's it. But Happiness is a Warm Gun. You don't, no clue on the tone?
No.
Damn.
No idea how they did it. I wonder if we could,
it's probably,
I'm sure there's like some forums out there.
And that, when John dives deep into that vocal tone of, I need a fix, how he drops.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant, man. Just brilliant.
And that just sleazy guitar. That's what you're talking about, right? That,
yes. Wow, right there. Wow, wow, yes.
It sounds like they're just like barely playing.
It's almost a precursor to that Afghan Whig stuff that came out in the 90s where it's just like, God, this is dirty. I don't know if
it's
sleazy.
It's like junkied out. Yeah.
I don't know if I should be listening to this. This is from somebody's diary or stuff they couldn't even write in a diary. Before we move on or start to wind it down, you got a story about a guy who bought a bunch of copies and copies of the White Album. What did he do?
Oh, it was like an art installation as much as anything, where this guy just collected, and this was when vinyl was cheaper than it is currently. His name is Rutherford Chang, and he collected first pressing White Albums.
Okay.
So anytime that he saw one, he'd buy it. And I think he had been doing this for like years and years. So there was a time when, they may have just been sitting by the curb for some people, moving past their vinyl collection. So he had over 100 of them, and he recorded all of them and then lined. They all start at like the same 0.00 whatever starting point.
Mm-hmm.
And you press play, and it's all 100 stacked up on top of each other, so that you hear like the normal pops kind of on steroids, little hiss, and then it starts going, and what has happened since those records were pressed, the lives that they have led, immediately creates warble. It's listenable warble at first, and then, I mean, it's, almost 25 minutes, it's side one. This is on SoundCloud. It just becomes insane.
In what way? Just...
Well, because if you get 100 used records that are at that point pushing 50 years old, there's just flaws for days. So like every time your record kind of, and he's putting it on the same turntable, he's creating as exact a system as he can to where it's not different, belt speeds or anything like that. It's just, if one makes a needle jump and it skips apart, like that's in there. If it's popping, if it's hissing, anything, any imperfections in the records. And there's one in every record times 100 creates a cacophony of noise.
There it is. Okay, I see what you mean now. All right, give me your top three Beatles album. If you can rank them or not, just the top three if you want.
White Album's probably on there.
White Album, Magical Mystery Tour. And you got a third option here.
I think it's probably Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah.
And that may be as much for my sentimental attachment to it as any like objective, this is great kind of, because that was like the first one that I went, I remember having that CD and being 16 and driving around and just wearing it out and, you know, Day in the Life seeming like the most profound piece of music that I'd ever heard in my life.
Well, if listeners haven't seen how they get that last chord.
Yeah.
On that song, just that right there is,
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you don't have any, well, like, where are you with that undercurrent of darkness and depression in those last two albums?
To me, the magic of the Beatles is the four guys together. And when they kind of splinter and they're just playing on each other's songs, it becomes less enamoring to me. I mean, obviously, they're still churning out some absolutely incredible songs, but I don't know, like, there's darkness on the three that I listed, you know, and I think Day in the Life is like a pretty bleak song.
But it's more of a upfront darkness and not necessarily about them, whereas those last two seem to have just, it's the subtext.
I think there's a lot of like young men who have, you know, they're like, they had been dogs chasing a car and they caught the car on those records. You know, I mean, I think that starts with Help. It probably starts earlier than that, but Help is the easiest. That sounds like that's the joke, right? It sounds like a pretty upbeat song that has these depressing lyrics. And I think that kind of like existential malaise is already there on those. It obviously intensifies by Abbey Road and Let It Be, but I don't know, that collision of dark and light, of having lost something for what all they gained. You know, I don't think it would be tough for John Lennon to write Strawberry Fields without the success.
Mm-hmm.
Because his previous life was completely walled off from him. And I think that's plenty darkness for me, because they were still working together and I like that element of it.
Yeah. Those last two have that feeling of, we see the end coming.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad. What about you want to shout out any of your favorite Beatles songs? Top five, any order?
Strawberry Fields, Across the Universe, Day in the Life, While My Guitar Gently Weeps has got to be up there.
How many is that?
That's four.
Ah.
Five's tough.
You know, we did this thought exercise the other day in a text. I'll just pull up mine. We did 10, though. We had the opportunity to get 10.
What so I was trying to do there was, I always like asking people that question and then plotting how many songs of each Beatle are represented on that list. This is like a personality test.
Okay. You got a favorite?
Mine is John. Mine's John heavy, for sure.
Yeah. Well, you got a favorite Beatle solo career?
Or album?
Career. If you're going in the record store and you got to buy a Paul album, John album, Ringo album, George, where are you going?
John.
Yeah, me too.
George, I mean, the best second. Beatles solo record is objectively All Things Must Pass, right?
It could be, but at the same time, I'm buying John's stuff first. If I haven't listened to it, if you tell me go into the record store and buy one of these guys, I'm going to buy John's. And then George.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have tried to become a Paul guy over the year.
I've tried.
Over the years.
It's hit or miss.
I love some of it.
I do too. So here were mine, not five, by the way, way over five. I think I listed these the other night. Happiness is a Warm Gun, Cry Baby Cry, I'm Heavy on the White Album, Strawberry Fields, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, another White Album cut, Across the Universe, I agreed with you there, Tomorrow Never Knows made mine.
Is it because of Mad Men?
A little bit, probably, but also no, I don't know, it's just, I like that mindset. Where they're coming from there. I like that kill the ego.
Just full-on transcendental psychedelic Beatles.
Yeah, fuck yeah. 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 Carry That Weight is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And I'll go for... One that's always on some playlist I make is Hello Goodbye. I just love the playful...
That surprised me.
Yeah, why?
Because it's playful, like you said.
It's so playful. But it's playful vocally so that I can sing in the shower this part or that part or the third part. Or you know what I mean? Yeah, and then especially when they get going, it's like second verse.
Hello,
it's like,
hello, hello.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's good shit. I mean, they could be saying almost anything, but it does work lyrically as a set of lyrics, I think. It's good stuff. I'll share this as we wrap, and I've shared it with you, I think. The first time I tripped on mushrooms, I was around that time I had listened to a lot of Beatles anthology stuff, and they had some outtakes of Strawberry Fields on there that were just fantastic. Maybe better than the single that was released. Maybe not. But I got hooked on them. Not horribly so, but just I just loved them. Those came out in November, December, and fast forward to me in the summer of that next year, and I think first time I tripped on mushrooms, when I reached the part of the mushroom trip where a lot of people go, where you're just like, get me out of this. My train ride should be over.
Mm-hmm.
Let me off. I kept repeating Strawberry Fields' line of how nothing's real. And it was blowing my fucking mind.
Yeah.
It was intense, but also comforting to know that they were probably doing something quite similar and that's what they saw. It's like, okay, so they felt this too. I'm going to make it. I'm going to be okay in 2 hours.
Well, were they okay?
Let's see.
One could ask.
Poor John. One could ask. Poor John. That's our Beatles talk. Really odd episode for us. We are TV and streaming.
That was weird.
Yeah, it's great though.
Hey, I got some homework for you. You want some Beatles homework?
Let's do it.
Have you ever gone on YouTube? I hope this still exists. You can get the isolated drum track or maybe drum and bass track for Oh Darling.
Mm-mm. Not that particular song. I've done a few of those songs like that.
You go listen to Ringo play that song.
I would say I write it down, but I will end up editing this and hearing it again. All right. There you go, listeners. Do that. I'll do it. We'll circle back around somewhere and figure out what we think. Oh, Darling, isolated drum track, right?
That's the one.
What's it going to do for me? Blow my mind?
Yeah.
Make my day?
Anyway, it'll make you happy. It'll make you happy. And you talked about the feel, the instruments having almost like a voice to them, the drums having a voice. Anybody that thinks Ringo is in a top-notch drummer, too, can go kick rocks after they watch that video.
Hey, let's talk about these two things as a wrap. Yoko doesn't deserve the heat. Ringo is as good a drummer as anybody. That's two myths that are stupid. Fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it for us, people. There's where we're ending. Find us, Taking It Down Pod, on any social media, I think. Yeah, I think so. That's any Threads, Instagram, Blue Sky, TikTok. We're all three. We can be a little irregular on some of those, but we can also be really regular. If you reply, we get a notification, so you can always talk to us. The Alabama Takes, our home site production company. Plenty of writing there to read. Go there. Follow them online. Well, it's us, too, so the Alabama Takes. Until next week, I'm Donovan Reinwald. This has been Adam Morrow with me. We'll talk to everybody later. Bye.